I never want to stand before the Lord at the end of the day or at the end of my life and say, well, everybody else is as bad as I was. I don't think that's not the response of a disciple, and that's not what I aspire to, even though there are many things that I aspire to that I haven't quite achieved yet.
Sure. Welcome back to another installment of the Shepherd's Voice podcast with Archbishop George J. Lucas. Archbishop Lucas, good to be with you again.
Thank you. It's good to be with you as well.
This is our first installment for November. Something that a lot of people may not know inside the church is that November is recognized, commemorated for a number of things. It's a month of the dead. We just had All Souls, All Saints Day. But it's something that I will admit, not aware of until fairly recently. November is also Black Catholic History Month. And on the 2nd of November, you had the opportunity to hold a listening session with a bunch of people that were assembled by the Archdiocese's Black Catholic Implementation Team. Can you tell us a little about that and how that came together and what was the aim? Mm-hmm.
The aim was to sort of raise up a pastoral letter that was published by the National Bishops' Conference about a year ago. It's entitled Open Wide Our Hearts, The Enduring Call to Love, a Pastoral Letter Against Racism. We, as pastors in various dioceses around the country, continue to notice with sorrow that racism is an issue in our country that sadly has not gone away. And occasionally, and not so rarely, sadly, in our time, there seem to be overt manifestations of racism, as well as the kind of undercurrent of racism that I think many people talk about experiencing still. So the bishops published a letter, and then a good part of our commitment in terms of publishing the letter was for the conference itself to work with dioceses to schedule listening sessions to sort of look at the content and the beauty of this letter, but also to allow those who have had hurtful experiences of racism in their own lives to be able to talk about that and to be invited to a greater level of healing. I'm grateful that one of my brother bishops, Bishop Shelton Faub from the Diocese of Houma-Thibodaux in Louisiana, who now is the head of the USCCB Ad Hoc Committee Against Racism, that he was able to be here with us in Omaha, as well as a staff person from the conference. And they worked with the leadership here in Omaha to schedule and conduct this morning, which I was privileged to be part of. As we have a chance to become familiar with this pastoral letter, we realize that racism can involve any number of individuals or groups in our country. Normally, we would think minorities, but it helps us focus particularly on Native Americans, on African Americans, and then on recent immigrants, particularly from Latino countries and societies. So we had testimonies on that Saturday morning from those various groups. So I'm always grateful. It's a generous act when someone is willing to share his or her experience, especially if it's been hurtful. Mm-hmm. Certainly on that day, those experiences were shared very respectfully. They were heartfelt and powerful. And kind of grateful to the Bishops' Conference for sort of setting up this format where people can both express themselves and be heard by the church's pastors, but by others in the community as well.
Was there anything particularly striking or surprising as you listened? Something you heard that you hadn't heard before in that way?
I wouldn't say that there was something that I hadn't heard before. I've been involved in similar experiences as this, and my work as a priest and a bishop has allowed me to have many good interactions with a variety of people in the church, including those who might be considered minorities in the society or in the church herself. After listening to the testimonies, I made a couple of observations to the group there, which I'm happy to share. One of them is that I was reminded of how deep and long-lasting the hurt can be in the life and in the heart of someone who has really been disrespected, put down, ostracized because of their race. We heard that day from now adults well into middle age who recounted experiences that their families had had regarding schools or parishes when they were younger. And those experiences have continued to shape them. I admire the ones that spoke for the the healing that they have been open to over time, but also for being very frank about the injustice that they have felt in a very personal way. Some has been directed towards them by individuals who were very disrespectful of them because of their race or ethnicity. And some of it has been the result of institutional structures that have sought to ostracize or to lessen the influence or the place in the community of those of a particular race. Second thing that struck me was we heard from some teenagers who have been experiencing racism, as they recounted in their public high school. That's a reminder to me, to all of us, that this is still going on. Mm-hmm. And I feel sad for them and bad for all of us that we haven't, as a community and as a society, been able to overcome what is really a sin. It's the effect of original sin that we experience differences among us as a negative and as a cause for acting in a way that's prideful or disrespectful to someone else. So it makes me sad that we haven't sort of come to grips with that more, both in the church and in our larger society. I'm sad to know that young people are still experiencing this hurt, which elders in the community talked about from decades ago.
I had the privilege to be there too for a good portion of the morning, and I too was struck by the stories that were shared and gratified by the candor of those young people, as you said. And I saw you got to sit down at table with them for the lunch. There was a luncheon as well. I'm sure that was a gratifying experience for them, that their pastor came and, you know, the pastor of our local church came and sat and talked with him. I mean, what else did you hear as they got to kind of unpack their experience?
Well, more of the same. I think what I heard were very intelligent and energetic young men and women. They're going to be leaders in our community, I hope, before long.
Or already are in some way.
Yeah. I mean, their willingness to give their testimony on that day showed real courage and leadership. I'm happy they have that they're part of a community, as was experienced that day, who can really support and encourage them. We all must be committed to work as we move forward to, you know, eliminate the sin of racism from our own hearts and lives, but also to work together in the community to eliminate the institutional forms of this sin as well as we can. The pastoral letter focuses very much, and Bishop Faub reminded us of this at the beginning of the morning, the pastoral letter focuses on, as we always must focus on, individual conversion of heart. So we're called first not simply to call out other examples of racism that we see around us, but to go into our own hearts and to realize that we all have a tendency in this direction, particularly those of us who would up until now be considered members of the majority in society and who have been on the receiving end of many blessings and privileges growing up and still in our adult lives. So to be willing to go before God and admit our sinfulness and to ask for healing and to ask the Lord to reveal to us how we might be more open to positive personal connections, both in society, but particularly in the church, with brothers and sisters of different races and different cultural backgrounds. I think the letter calls us to realize also that the effect of racism is, it sort of grows out of the immediate effects of original sin, and we still feel those in our time, that the effect of sin really is division. Whenever we see division, whenever we see one group pitted against another, or particularly when an individual or a group is actively fomenting disrespect for another race or another cultural group, that's the work of the devil, and we need to recognize that for what it is. There are differences, and as a result of original sin, we sometimes have a hard time understanding one another. I mean, the differences in language is a clear example of that, but even here in this country, when Caucasians and African Americans have lived next to each other and we hope more and more interacted over time, there still is a challenge to be respectful, to understand each other. The pastoral letter encourages us to listen to each other and encourages us to allow anyone who might have experienced the hurt of racism to speak for himself or herself about what they have experienced. It's easy enough for me, for any of us, to say, well, that's not a problem, or you shouldn't feel that way.
Or that's not my problem.
Yeah, or it's not my problem. Or, you know, you're just holding, you know, you're holding on to something, and you just need to let go of all that. Nobody likes to hear that, really, about themselves. I mean, we kind of flippantly say that to others, but if there's something that I have experienced or that I'm really struggling with, I appreciate it, and it's sort of owed to me that others will honor my opportunity just to speak for myself. Mm-hmm. And I don't have the whole picture of the whole world, but I do have the slice of my own experience and perceptions. This isn't all the same thing as to say there's one truth for me and one truth for somebody else. But we have, in terms of our interactions with one another and how we come together in the church as members of the body of Christ, how we come together in our society for the common good, we have experienced and seen different facets of the truth, and they're all needed for the whole picture. We just really don't move in the direction of the common good. We don't move in the direction of the unity that is Jesus' desire for us in the church if we aren't able to listen to each other and allow one another to express our own experiences. It's also important then that we do acknowledge where evil has crept in or where we have allowed evil in by our own ignorance, perhaps, or by our own selfishness or pride or prejudice.
So what opportunities do you see for the faithful, for those listening, to begin to, I guess, recognize where there are divisions in their own immediate community, like their immediate circumstance? Because I, like, as you were saying, that I think the thing that, at least when I first hear it, I go, oh, that's more uncomfortable than, for example, talking about institutional problems in a way that's true. Like, that is something that's a factor of life we need to reckon with, but it can also be at times, it can let us off the hook a little bit if that's all I focus on is out there somewhere and not the conversion of heart, as you said, that the letter calls us to in the first place. So where do you see those possibilities, those opportunities for some in our local community to begin to hear and listen to one another and to begin to share more of the experience of Christian life together instead of in the divisions?
We have to be intentional about those opportunities. It's really easy enough for us to sort of live past each other. And we're focused in our own families, which is normal, and in our own communities, and we tend to gravitate to people like us. The Lord has put many different people in our lives and in our community, and He loves and values each of us. And I think our experience, if we're open to it, is that when we have the opportunity to get to know someone of another race or another culture, we're not diminished ourselves, but we really become more ourselves. We're able to, I think, be both affirmed and challenged in some new ways, so that we grow more into the people that we're capable of being, even as we have interaction with someone who might, in some ways, be very different. I think we discover often in many ways we have very, very similar values and experiences, even though the particular circumstances might be different. When we articulated our pastoral vision several years ago, and we continue to hold this up, it begins with the phrase "one church." We know that's the mind and the heart of Jesus, and that needs to be our mind and heart also. The people who were part of the listening session recently were all members of the Catholic Church, but have had a variety of experiences of being able to participate fully or being accepted or feeling valued within the Catholic community, particularly. We need to lean into this, and we need to be intentional about it, I think, on several levels. So there's sort of the macro level. We had this last summer our Arch Omaha Unite event, which was designed to help us on one day at least not be living past each other, but to come together, to speak together, to witness our faith together, to pray together, to just be in one another's presence, and to kind of look around and say, well, this is us. When we talk about who are we in the Catholic Church in this archdiocese, it's a rich tapestry of races and cultures. We celebrate as a beautiful reality. So many gifts that the Holy Spirit is providing for us within the church, but also for the larger community through our life and work and worship together. Secondly, kind of on another level, I think we need to see that it's part of our responsibility as missionary disciples of Jesus to share the reality of human life and dignity, which comes from God, with our neighbor. So we have a year from now, elections. They're already well into the political season. I think every season is political now these days. But as we talk about the future of our country, as we talk about political, social issues, I think we really need to be conscious of speaking respectfully and to not be drawn into a crude kind of humor or stereotyping or any talk that we would participate in or even encourage that denigrates or encourages disrespect for any other individual or group in our society. It's not the case with everybody, but there are those who are involved in the political process, as there are in any group in our society, who are racist and who, for whatever reason, seem to enjoy being agents of division and of disrespect. I think, again, we have to acknowledge that that happens and not be part of that. And to the extent that we can influence things to go in a different direction, you know, that's our responsibility. Jesus has invited us to be with him in the church, but he sends us out to be light for the world, to be salt for the earth. So we're supposed to be having an effect. And at this particular moment in our history, I think this is a particular calling that we have. I think then, as I mentioned earlier, the pastoral letter invites us to examine ourselves personally, to examine our own thoughts and feelings towards others, our speech, and our relationship with other people, particularly those who are of a different race or ethnicity than ourselves. Our Omaha community and really the whole archdiocese, the whole state of Nebraska, is much more diverse now than it was just a few decades ago.
Yeah.
All of the people who we see around us are God's people, all reflect the image of the Creator in a unique way. That's a particular insight we have from the Scriptures and from our Catholic faith. So we need to believe in the dignity of our brothers and sisters, first of all, and then we need to live out of that. Need to live out of that belief. I am always struck when I listen to those who have experienced racist talk or action on the part of others, that the perpetrators of that may or may not have been conscious of the hurt that they were inflicting on somebody else.
Right.
But the hurt is real. That leads us then to really kind of examine our lives, our speech, our humor, our political rhetoric, all of that personally, and to really ask for the help of God's grace to root out of ourselves any attitudes of prejudice or lack of respect for someone else. Most people know that we're Catholic. Most people know that we claim to be disciples of Jesus Christ. So any racist speech or humor or actions or decisions can have a scandalous effect on young people, especially, but also on other neighbors of ours. This has been a problem in our country from the beginning, still is. It can certainly be a problem in the church. And we, those of us who are in the majority, I think are clearly not always conscious of how words or actions might have a hurtful effect or an effect of trying to diminish the role or the dignity of someone else. So prayerful examination before the Lord is helpful, I think. And and then a prayer to ask the help of the Holy Spirit to see how we can have a good influence in this regard.
Yeah. Charity is a theological virtue. I can't do it myself. I need to beg the Lord to. I mean, I know myself. I know I'm not the most charitable person of anybody. So I know I need to ask for the gift to do that. Open wide our hearts is the perfect title for that. That message. It can sound like church speak, you know, just sort of an aphorism that we say, oh, open wide our hearts. It's like one of those hymns we sing. And this is a real prayer. It's not automatic that we have our hearts open to everybody. There was another striking point that a few of the different people who spoke on Saturday mentioned also the temptation amongst different groups that would be considered the minority, you know, the experience of racist talk and actions toward one another. And at least one young woman was saying that this was something of a surprise, but also it was hurtful. And again, it says none of us is exempt from this possibility.
Yeah, it's always a temptation for a group that in some corner of the world or of society might be a majority in that setting or in a position of power or authority to use that in an unjust way to put down somebody else, to exclude or disrespect someone else. So yeah, it's part of the human condition. At the same time, we don't want to say, well, it can, you know, everybody's like this. So
therefore,
I don't have to worry about it. But somebody else is as bad as I am. Well, that's
race to the bottom. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, that's never I never want to stand before the Lord at the end of the day or at the end of my life and say, well, everybody else is as bad as I was. I don't think that's not the response of a disciple, and that's not what I aspire to, even though there are many things that I aspire to that I haven't quite achieved yet.
Sure. You mentioned, so we're just going to add as a sort of a brief coda at the end of here, that the root of what we're talking about is unity. And the particular challenge of this upcoming election cycle, as you mentioned, it seems to be just like the 24-hour news cycle. We're now in the 365-day-a-year election cycle. There's an initiative, and you referenced the scripture that we're to be salt and light, and there's actually a salt and light community and the USCCB that are co-sponsoring a simple little initiative called Civilize It 2020. And do you want to tell us a little bit about that? And then I'll add the links and the requisite materials in the podcast notes.
The bishops of the country are encouraging all of us to see the upcoming year between now and the election, beyond that too, of course, but to see this upcoming period as an opportunity to have an effect regarding civility in our own interactions, and to try to influence and, in a sense, call to account those who are in public office and aspiring to public office in this election time. It's a joint effort of a number of religious groups in the United States, and on the USCCB website, you can find more information about it. We'll probably have a chance to talk about these efforts more, in the coming months. But it's a reminder to us. We would like to remind ourselves during this period that my default position should not be as a political animal, but as a disciple of Jesus Christ. And I can have very strong political leanings and strong preferences in terms of how things need to be worked out in society, but I can't check my faith in Jesus Christ and my identity as a follower of His in the Catholic Church at the door. We just can't live in two worlds. We're always in the same world. We're always disciples of Jesus. So in our conversations, you know, between now and the election, in what we support in terms of campaigning and sloganing and electioneering, all of those things, in our conversations at the dinner table, or whether they're with neighbors, or maybe in part of the political process in some way, we're being invited to be respectful, to treat others as we want to be treated, and to realize that whoever it is that we're speaking with, even if it's someone with whom we have serious disagreements, that other person is a daughter or son of God and deserves my respect, period. It would be great if we could move to a position, it is possible, where we could discuss ideas and disagree about ideas and about directions, for the country. And we should do that. Again, from those of us who embrace the gospel of Jesus Christ, would like to bring the insights that are taken from the gospel about God's plan for the human family. We'd like to bring those to our conversations, to offer those as a gift to the conversation, to the political debate. We don't impose our faith on anybody. But the truth has its power and its attraction, and as we see the truth reflected in Jesus and in the gospel, we should feel free to share that. But the shouting and the lack of civility, the lack of respect, is everybody can have their own opinion on this, I suppose. I don't think it's doing our country any good, but it's certainly not befitting a follower of Jesus Christ to act that way. Jesus was very clear in pointing out the difference between right and wrong, very clear in challenging people who were self-righteous and who were misusing their authority, whether it was religious or civil authority. But we don't find him calling people disrespectful names and sort of denigrating a whole class of people. The message of Jesus is an invitation, and that really should be our approach to politics and to other interactions in civil society, that we invite others to see things the way we see them, but we also try to listen. As I mentioned before, there are different facets to the truth. It's not like the truth is different for one person and for another, but can learn more. And the fact is, our Christian faith is calling us to move forward, and we need to move forward as a country and as a state and as a city. In other words, not just say, well, okay, we've got these problems and differences, and it's just intractable. We can't do anything. Somebody's going to do something. Something's going to happen.
Right.
The future is coming, and either we help to shape it as disciples of Jesus Christ, or we're victimized by it.
That's an interesting point, because you mentioned that what our Lord hands us as a, you know, he doesn't hand us a political program per se. He certainly doesn't set up a zero-sum game saying, okay, Peter, James, John, go make sure that your guy gets in office. Otherwise, they'll win, those bad people over there. And then you're lost and everything is for naught, right? Which isn't an excuse to say, you know, as you said, we're not involved in the common good. No, we're involved in building the common good. It's, you said it's, we live in one world, not we're in spiritual land some of the time, and then we're in political land the rest of the time. That's sort of spiritual schizophrenia. But yeah, there's not a zero sum game. Often, you know, people will, we see this on social media. So I would say, if anyone's listening and they're interested in this Civilize It pledge, that's one of the, I would say, chief places right now where conversation is needed, or where fasting is needed. That is, maybe you should just fast from social media if this is too much of a temptation, and try to have real conversations face-to-face with people over a table. But I think sometimes there's the temptation, and I know this from my, you know, my past, my experience too, to think that if I give a little bit, or if I'm kind or patient with the point that we're trying to make, I'll lose something. And then it's over. That's the zero-sum approach. But as you said, I mean, there's no... what way forward can we conceive of where there's only winning and losing? Right. And those aren't categories that Jesus gives us.
Yeah, I mean, the simple fact is that we can't talk about respect for human life and dignity and then tell somebody, and you're an idiot if you don't agree with me.
Right.
And be credible.
Right.
In the long run, it doesn't ring true. Again, none of us is perfect in this regard, but we have to both talk and act respectfully of others. If the invitation is to others to be more respectful, particularly of the vulnerable, those in our society who need particular care, if we're inviting us to see that every person is deserving of respect because of the dignity they have from God, we can't be calling each other names and think we'll be credible.
Right.
It's going to be a long election season.
So we will pray. And pray again. We'll continue to pray for everybody, for you, dear listener. Please keep the Archbishop and these efforts in your prayers continually, that more people can be reached by the light of the gospel.
I invite any who are able to do it to pick up the Bishop's Pastoral Letter Against Racism, Open Wide Our Hearts. You can find it online. It's not very long. I do think this is something we all need to attend to. And it's a very engaging scriptural approach to this issue in the letter. And I think it could be a benefit to anyone who would pick it up and read it.
Wonderful. Thank you, Archbishop.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to The Shepherd's Voice, a podcast of the Archdiocese of Omaha. For more information, visit archomaha.org/podcast.